Let's get to our guest now. Vishnu Varathan is Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, joining us on the line from Singapore. Let's start with what we're seeing in the oil market. A little bit more steady movement after plunging almost 6% on that demand picture. And of course, the strength that we are seeing in the dollar. I mean, when you look at the hawkish central bank tones that we're getting, the lockdowns in China, what is the picture for the crude market?
Well, it does look like crude prices will be most sensitive to any demand cues that come through, like we saw overnight. Nevertheless, absent any fresh demand cues to the downside, particularly, what I think would come about from the crude market is price stickiness on the way down. So while we see other commodities softening a lot more, oil could turn out to be a lot stickier, primarily because of the geopolitical backdrop, as well as moves by the OPEC Plus. Very, very strongly suggesting that they would take action to backstop, including if an Iran deal comes through. So these indicators of the crude market suggest to us that the stickier prices are now, the more violent corrections and dislocations can be further out.
A lot of the stickiness, as you say, coming into the commodities market and driving up these price pressures. What do you think we're going to hear from Jay Powell in terms of, I guess, trying to halt some of these higher prices? And I guess the likelihood that we're going to see a dovish pivot is very, very slim.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to think so. For most of markets that have been used to, either for the more extreme perceptions, doublespeak from Powell or for the more measured ones, tempered statements. Jackson Hole was a bit of a revelation because it didn't mince words, unequivocal in every sense. I think it makes sense that, commentary from Jay Powell will be quite consistent with what we saw at Jackson Hole. And I think the emphasis will be on two things. One is the job is not done yet, even if inflation starts decelerating, simply given how much higher inflation is above ideal levels. And the second one would be, even if the job is deemed done and probably above 4% levels, it'll remain there for some time. So I think these two would be the main statements, even if markets, I think, found joy in Bernard's allusion to a potential pivot some way down the road.
We were just hearing the news as well that Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are going to meet in person for the first time since the start of the war in Ukraine. Amidst all of what we're seeing with hawkish central banks, the downturn in the economy, how much does this just add to these pressures too? And I guess how concerned are you about a global downturn?
I would be increasingly concerned for two reasons. One is the geopolitical picture and even within China, the political landscape is such that economic incentives are not topmost, political incentives are, and they come at the cost of economic recovery. So that's one. The other is insofar that President Xi expresses unchecked support for Russia, then the geopolitical situation could worsen, supply side shocks could remain, and that would lead us to a recession.
Do we actually see China here significantly relaxing the dynamic zero policy after the Party Congress?
Our suspicion is that they will discernibly begin to relax, but I don't think it's going to be a distinct one-off move. Rather, we think it'd probably be quite phased and over the course of at least the first half of next year. One reason is a sharp U-turn would be, for the lack of a better term, a loss of face, given how recently President Xi has been doubling down on the zero COVID policy. But there is a sense amongst those worried about the economy that something needs to change. And so we think those changes will start taking place late this year.
When it comes to the currency, and this is something we're watching across Asia with this strong dollar, why is 7, so significant? We know we're seeing very strong moves by the PBOC to try and rein in this weak currency, but there's also the thought that maybe they'll allow it to depreciate further in terms of, I guess, trying to guide some of these moves that you're seeing in the economy.
that's a good question. So there's certainly some dichotomy between managing the renminbi on a trade-weighted basis versus being very wary of psychological levels such as 7. And one reason for that could be that, you know, we've seen pretty sharp moves, not all entirely on the part of the renminbi, you know, partly driven by the dollar, but nevertheless, really sharp moves. And so there may be a fear that, you know, getting past psychological levels could see a lot of speculative interest piling in, leading to capital outflows, not unlike 2015, 2016 type of, you know, China crisis sell-off. So I think preempting that with that kind of a stitch-in-time attitude may be one reason. The other is, even on a trade-weighted basis, whilst it remains fairly elevated, well above the 2017-2018 levels of the renminbi near, the fact is that in the last two to three months, the renminbi has you know, pulled back quite significantly from even on trade-weighted levels. So I think there is a more distinct move to temper that, to perhaps put across the point that they're not totally hands-off.
It's not just the yuan. You've got the won at this 13-year low. We saw a record for the peso yesterday. You've got the yen plunge, of course, as well at these 1998 levels. How much of a concern is it that we could see another Asian currency crisis?
It is not insignificant. I think, you know, it depends on two things that take place. One is really a huge dollar wave, bullish dollar wave, inconveniently raising, you know, inflation risks, thereby compounding the sell-off and then feeding back into, you know, FX reserve cash burn. That is one thing that can set off a really bad spiral. I think authorities are very worried about that. And the other is perhaps through the credit channels, given that nations across EMs, particularly in EMA, you know, across EMs particularly, are more indebted after COVID. Any negative credit ripples would also be another huge concern. So really, this bullish dollar strength, it will not be just taken as a byproduct of a hawkish Fed. It has got macro stability implications.
Let's talk about the Europe picture. I mean, we talked about the global recession worries, but yesterday you had the euro trying to get back to that parity level. But what are you expecting from the ECB? And if we do see this record 75 basis point hike, does that even help the euro that much?
I think it'll boil down to the rhetoric behind what the ECB is doing. And to your point, even a slightly more hawkish rhetoric with the 75 basis point move may not be sufficient for the euro to sustainably regain traction, because as the you know, energy shocks become a bigger issue and fiscal strains grow, fragmentation risks also start to become very accentuated. And under these conditions, you know, ECB hikes may do very little to restore confidence in the euro.
About 20 seconds left. Where is, I guess, the best place to be amidst all this global economic downturn? Everyone's saying ASEAN. Is that right? Is it Singapore where we are?
I think Singapore is safe for now, but, you know, a global recession will not spare Singapore. And a global recession means very few safe places. So that's just how things pan out, I suppose.
All right, Vishnu, always great to chat to you. Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank, on the line from Singapore for us here on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.